Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome in to Jake and Stacy. Seattle Seahawks finished the season 12-4 after a win over the 49ers. It wasn't pretty for most of the game, guys. We know that. We're going to be taking your calls, talking about the Seahawks heading into the postseason, going to be recapping this game, looking back at the things that mattered most with what caught our eye. We're going to have Mike Salk joining us, and we're going to be talking about the most important questions coming out of this game, which, quite honestly, Jake, almost all of them center around this offense. I'm going to be really honest, a lot of questions around this offense after this game.
Well, there is a lot of questions about this offense, no question. But I think that, first of all, you have to take a minute to bask in the accomplishments of a 12-4 season.
Yeah.
This is the fifth time in franchise history they have gone 12-4. That's an incredible accomplishment that deserves to be celebrated. As you look around every team in the playoffs at this current moment in time, you look at the Tennessee Titans, you look at the Cleveland Browns, you look at some of these other franchises who are partying like no tomorrow because they are in the playoffs. I think it's just a great reminder to settle in and look at 12-4 and look at what this team has done in the final four games of the season. They've gone 4-0. This is something to be proud of. Something to be excited about. Here in cut number three, Pete Carroll talking about how they wanted to win their last four games.
All in all, when it came down to it, we had to win the fourth quarter, and our guys did. And that was what it took to finish this 2020 in the regular season, to what it took to finish this four-game stretch that we were pointing to. We wanted to win four games and know what that's like moving forward. And we wanted to always see our guys come through and outlast the other guys and find a way to win a football game, even if it goes down the last second. And so we did a lot of cool things there.
So you hear Pete say we did a lot of cool things there. I understand why people are concerned or frustrated or whatever the case may be. I, a time or two, may have wanted to throw my phone
just
through
maybe.
The TV at different times. Maybe.
Maybe you told me in group.
Cannot confirm or deny in our group text. But to me, what I am more concerned about is this team's ability to be able to overcome that. And when you look at this offense and what they've done in the second half versus the Rams game, and you look at the fourth quarter of this 49ers game, you can see that this offense has everything it needs to be explosive, to be successful, to do all the things that everybody has the expectations for this offense. Now, the difference is that you haven't seen that for a full four quarters, which would make everybody feel a lot better, no question about that. But to me, what they've been able to accomplish is the ability to rally, the ability to come down to the wire at the end and find that killer instinct again, and to be able to pull off these late wins. I didn't want to see that versus the 49ers this last week. I thought that this game would be a little bit different. But overall, to me, that is a very positive thing when I look at this game and I reflect on it. The last two games, that's going to be important when it comes to the playoffs, Stacey, and that's what we're in now. We're not in the regular season.
Yep.
This is the playoffs. This is about survive and advance. This is about win any way possible. And when you know you have one of the greatest quarterbacks at the end of games, and he's playing that way, to me, that is very, very encouraging as you're moving forward. And again, you're going to face one of the best defenses in the league yet again in the Rams, and it's going to be a tight ball game. It will be.
There are two things that are annoying me after this game, and annoying isn't the right word. It sounds like I'm complaining, but let me tell you what I mean. Just hear me out. The first thing is what the Seahawks are or sometimes aren't doing on the field, which is converting on third down on offense. This was a game in which we saw monumental accomplishments for the offense that they should be proud of. Now the highest scoring Seahawks offense in franchise history. Two 1,000-yard receivers for the first time since 1995, when that was Joey Galloway and Brian Blades. That's an amazing accomplishment. That was before many players in the league were born. You had DK Metcalf set a new record in single season receiving yards. Tyler Lockett set a new record in receptions this year. Russell Wilson get really close to setting a new career record. I mean, it was a phenomenal year. The problem is that is the sum total of the season, which includes a stretch of games when they were on fire and playing at their I don't want to say at their ceiling, at their best level, what they're most capable of doing. And then a stretch of games where you are scratching your head, pulling your hair out, watching this offense come off the field every single time on third and long or third and short because they couldn't get it done. They are too good an offense to have that happen consistently. I think that many of those issues are fixable, right? But that's why it's annoying. It's fair. Football fans, it's okay to watch and get annoyed. So maybe my second point here isn't fair. Because the other thing, Jake, that is really annoying me last night and this morning is just the anger people have at a 12-4 team. No, they're not. Just listen, the Seahawks aren't elite. They're not an elite team. They have elite-level talent. They have not executed like the league's best team. I would say Kansas City has done that, even in their mistakes. I know someone might point to the game against the Falcons and say, that would have gone into overtime had that field goal been made. But guess what? For the most part, they are a pretty elite team, a pretty elite offense. The Green Bay Packers this season have been fantastic. The Saints this season have, for the most part, been fantastic. A little more inconsistent, but still more consistent than the rest of the NFC for sure, not including Green Bay. The Seattle Seahawks are 12-4. They clinched their division. They have performed well, if not inconsistent on offense. They have performed well. They've been in it. They've won. Russell Wilson hasn't played like an MVP in the second half of the season after playing like the runaway favorite in the first half. I know why you would be frustrated with that, but why are you complaining about a team that is 12-4? Why are you complaining about being your division winner, the number three seed, when there are Cleveland Browns fans freaking out because their team made the playoffs for the first time since 2002? I am not telling you, you know, like your mom, that you need to be grateful and that there are like starving children somewhere and he'll be happy that you're in the playoffs. No. You should absolutely be desiring a Super Bowl. Your quarterback is a good quarterback who is getting paid $35 million a year. You have traded two first-round picks. Your expectations this year should be a Super Bowl. It is okay to want more from your team. To me, though, I'm sorry. I am annoyed with you if you think this is a bad team. They are objectively not a bad team. And saying so doesn't make me stupid. And you saying that it's horrible and pointing out all these negative things doesn't make you, like, incredibly smarter than everyone else. It just means that you're not enjoying the ride.
No, certainly. You're certainly not enjoying the ride, and it certainly doesn't make you smart. Because this team has every capability of getting to the Super Bowl. Do they need to play a more complete game on the offensive side of the ball to match what the defense is doing? Absolutely they do. But to me, when you look at this group overall, to me, this is the way that Pete Carroll wants to play this game, Stacey. And it's not exhilarating. It's not fun at times. But you know what? When you talk about Pete Carroll looking at this group and saying when this team, it's an amazing stat, when this team is plus or even in the turnover margin, they're 12-0. They are 12-0. And to me, that is an incredible stat. If they can continue to do that through the playoffs, that gives them a chance. It gives them an opportunity in any game to be in striking distance, to be able to come back at any moment. Yes, even in the fourth quarter when they need it, knowing that you are confident that Russell Wilson can pull that off and he can do that time and time again. I think to me, that is the exciting part. But you talk about some of these frustrations, Stacey. To me, you have nailed this all season long. You have been a stickler about third downs. And this is not a recent thing. You have said this all season long, and you're 100% right, that this offense has to be better on third down. And it's frustrating when you look at the film and you dive into it and you watch. It's frustrating because it's not just one thing. It's not just one area that you could point to. The offensive line struggle, the receivers aren't getting open, Russell Wilson missing throws or missing a read, whatever. It's a collective group, and different things pop up at different times. But Stacey, this is the reason why you call it the money down, is because you have to be able to convert on third downs on a consistent basis to give yourself the best chance to win.
That's exactly
But this offense has been very explosive at times, and their two scoring drives when they needed it the most, Stacey, against a top five defense and the and probably the golden boy of defensive coordinators in this league, and Robert Saleh, hat tip to him, by the way, for an outstanding job he did this last season. Absolutely incredible. But you look at what they did when they needed it the most. To me, that was absolutely incredible. And their two scoring drives, Stacey, you know how many times they faced third down? They faced third down one time on each of these drives. So a combined total twice, third and goal. So what that tells me is they ripped it up on first and second down. That's when this offense is at its best. That's when they're able to be explosive. They're able to keep people on their heels, and they're able to march the ball up and down the field. That's the essence of what they have to be. That's what they've been all year, is when they've been at their best, it's because they are dominant on first and second down. It's not because they've been dominant on third down. And so, you know, that's the one area of concern for me moving forward, Stacey, is third downs. But other than that, I didn't come here on a Monday. Look, going into the playoffs as the number three seed, being 12-4, worried about this team whatsoever. I think that they are battle-tested. I think that they are ready to make a serious run at the Super Bowl. I think that this is a team that has all the makings of being able to win any game, any style. And to me, it's their ability to finish and that vital confidence, weathering the storms through a given game. And that's what playoff football is about. Can you take on adversity and be able to overcome it and trust your team to finish? And they've been able to do that on both sides of the ball. Finish.
That's exactly. And I have many things that I want to talk about with this offense. I'm looking at the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line right now. You guys all have really good points about what we're saying. And I respect people who say, hey, they aren't playing up to their talent. I agree with you. This is what I'm saying. They have made moves in the front office and on paper with the talent level that dictates that they should be more successful with these things, like third down, which is what we're talking about right now, than they are. You have Russell Wilson, you have DK Metcalf, you have Tyler Lockett, you have Chris Carson. You have struggled all year and been one of the worst teams on third down. Why? And we're going to be talking about that, specifically at 11:45, but the questions about the offense are ones that are fair and that we're going to be talking about all day and probably all week. But I think the one other thing I'm just saying is, like, just like, be okay with a 12-4. I don't know. I it's a dumb thing to complain about. I know that. But I guess part of me gets kind of defensive, feeling like me and Lydia used to talk about this a lot. You felt like if you were ever optimistic about something or happy about something, someone was thinking you were an idiot. And it was so dismissive. And I think that there are reasons to be optimistic, and I want to get to those too. So that's all I'm saying about that, Jake.
Well, Stacey, I think if anybody is being pessimistic in this situation, I don't think you're necessarily way off base. I think there's plenty to be concerned about with this team and their ability to go up against the Saints and the Green Bay Packers and everybody in the playoffs, and there are concerns, and there are things that will hold this team back if they cannot fix them. But to me, as I watch the film and I pour into the film and I examine this team, there are things that people are worried about, concerned about, that aren't even close to what people should be worried about. And when you talk about this team's ability to make a run in the playoffs, I feel more confident than ever that they are able to get that done. The way that they're playing defense, I do feel confident this offense will get it together, and that they will be able to play a more complete game moving forward. But again, I feel confident knowing that this quarterback, this offense, has the ability to finish, and they've been able to capture that versus two really, really good defense. Over the last 3 weeks, they have played the number one defense, the number three defense, and the number five defense in the league. So if the offense isn't looking perfect for you, it's probably a good reason why. They played some pretty good defenses, and guess what? They're going to play a really good defense again this Saturday, so buckle up. Buckle up, because it's not going to be the perfect 30-point game for you. This is going to be a battle, and it's the playoffs now, and it's win or go home, and this team is focused on doing everything it can to win each and every single week to get them that much more closer to the Lombardi Trophy.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross with you. Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What? Three questions now brought to you by Tila Mortgage, by the way. So question number one, guys, there was an actual rumor yesterday that John Schneider and the Lions could have something going on. So what on earth could Detroit offer Schneider that he doesn't already have in Seattle?
Yeah, that's a great question, Curtis, because when I saw that, I thought to myself, no way. This is week 16 of the NFL season is rumor mill. I mean, it's all about the rumor mill. Head coaching opportunities, who's going to get fired, who's not, who's going to try and poach who away. To me, this would be very surprising to see John Schneider move on to the Lions. And the only thing that they could offer him that he doesn't have here in Seattle is complete and full control. Him as the general manager not having full control here in Seattle, but Pete Carroll is the one that has full control over, you know, all of the behind-the-scenes moves and even roster decisions with the final say. To me, that is the only thing that he could do. And if he wants to step out of Pete Carroll's shadow, so to speak, I think he could do that. But John Schneider is well-regarded around the NFL. He is not looked at as some guy who is just riding on to Pete Carroll's coattails, not in the least. He is one of the best GMs in this league. He's paid like one of the best GMs in this league. So to me, I really view this as the Seahawks, if they feel like John Schneider is their guy, in perfect lockstep with Pete Carroll, that we should be hearing about a contract extension sooner rather than later.
Ooh, interesting. I was going to make a joke about how, oh, there's a Long John Silver's and a White Castle Burgers. Like, there's lots of stuff that Detroit offers.
A Little Caesars. I mean, you can get that out here, but
I don't think we have nearly
enough. Probably tastes different.
Not nearly enough. I would only assume so. But I think that Jake's right. I think that the difference is that you have more control. And I don't think as many people know how much control Pete Carroll has as far as front office and personnel decisions go, because it's not really a traditional amount of control that a head coach would have. He has quite a bit of say in things. And I can understand why, as a general manager, it might be frustrating at times if you make a move, whether it's a draft pick or a trade, and you want to see a guy get involved more or be coached differently, and it's frustrating to see that not happen. Thankfully, they've been a pretty compatible pair during their tenure. They've seen a lot of success. I don't know that Detroit is quite as tempting as some other jobs would be, so maybe that's the one thing Seattle fans can hope for and lean into if they're worried about losing Schneider. I mean, if it was, you know, Jacksonville or the Jets or a place that had a really top pick where you think, I can start rebuilding now. Detroit's in there at pick number 7. So is this when you get your franchise guy? I don't know. I think it's going to be, it's a tough sell when there's not that immediate return.
Number 2.
Run game coordinator Brennan Carroll off to my Arizona Wildcats, Bear Down. And Brian Schottenheimer, he was mentioned as a candidate for the Jets head coaching vacancy. So how different will Seattle's coaching staff look in 2021?
I think it could look very, very different. I think there could be a lot of movement with the staff, and rightfully so. When you score the most points in franchise history, when you have a quarterback who's hitting, you know, record highs pretty much all three seasons since Brian Schottenheimer has been here, I think that gives you a lot of momentum in gaining a head coaching job around the league. There's 6 head coaching vacancies, and I think Brian Schottenheimer is certainly a worthy candidate for any one of those 6 head coaching vacancies. So I think there's a good chance that there could be a lot of movement here, but it really, to me as well, will depend on kind of the domino effect of what happens with Eric Bieniemy, what happens with Robert Saleh. I think that those two guys are kind of the two most wanted head coaches, head coaching prospects in this search. But I think Brian Schottenheimer is going to be in the mix for all of these jobs when it's all said and done.
Now, this is a very real question. Do you think there's anything that could happen in the postseason that would influence his desirability, or do you think that that's set? Like, if the offense suddenly does take off, which I'm not necessarily expecting, like, I'm not expecting a return to the first couple weeks, say that they do. does that suddenly make teams pursue him even more?
I think teams, or is it pretty set? I think teams' opinions of coaches right now are pretty much set in stone. I mean, look, a couple of years ago, Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons. They had one of the biggest collapses in Super Bowl history. That didn't stop the 49ers from hiring him at all. That's kind of the opposite of, you know, if the Seahawks offense suddenly takes off here, will that make him more desirable? But I think teams already have their decisions made on these coaches that are coaching in the playoffs.
Next.
Yeah, fully agree there. Fully agree.
Number three.
What is the most intriguing wild card round matchup outside of LA against Seattle?
Wild card matchup. To me, when you look at this wild card matchup overall, there are a couple good games to me in this wild card matchup. When it determines what's at stake. Now, to me, the this might be a wild card here is the Bucks versus the Bears. I think is a better game than people might realize. I just think that I still have a hard time believing in this Bucks team fully. I'm not quite there yet with them. But the other game that I'm excited about is looking at the Tennessee Titans I'm excited about that matchup because this one could be fireworks. We'll see what ends up happening with that one.
That's a rematch of last year when Earl Thomas, his life was never the same.
Yep. You got Ravens at Titans, the 5 at the 4. In the AFC, I looked specifically at either upset potential or well-matched teams. So I thought Ravens and Titans were well-matched. Both have been a bit inconsistent at times. I'm kind of hoping for last year's playoff version of Derrick Henry. He's one of those few things where I think I lean into certainly the ideas that, like, yeah, passing offense more efficient, passing on first downs more efficient, even for the Seahawks, and I understand that, but he is the rare exception to me being like, okay, no, just give him the ball every single play. I don't even care. I want to see him run all over people. I think most upset potential, hear me out, I'm not, this isn't a lock. I'm not banking on it, but okay. Most upset potential, Colts at Bills.
Huh? Really? Okay. Colts at Bills.
Now I'm taking
really
the Bills
intriguing
to go to the championship, AFC championship, but I also think that Phillip Rivers, that Colts defense, at times they've looked pretty good.
Now I will throw out and say that the game, the reason why I said the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against Washington is one that I'm intrigued with is actually I think this could be the game that could be the upset alert. I think Washington's defense and the way that they can get after the quarterback and Tom Brady not being very mobile, maybe there is an opportunity for an upset. Maybe Washington's able to turn this into a nasty slugfest. I don't know. We'll see. But certainly their offense doesn't have the firepower to be able to keep up if Tom Brady and that offense is rolling. But maybe Washington's defense can come up with a big, big win.
Speaking of Washington's defense, are we all in agreement that Doug Peterson threw that game?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just making sure we're on the same page. Jake, dude, Jake's not 100%.
I'm not, definition of throwing the game, I don't think that he intentionally threw the game. I don't think that he was saying,
you thought he wanted to get a good look at a quarterback he's had since 2017.
Yeah, I'm not buying the narrative that he just lost that game.
You know what? I'm not 100% sold on it. I do want to get back to this in the timeline. We have to. The biggest story from yesterday. It's one of the rare occasions that I've heard broadcasters, too, be like, what is happening? Are you seeing what I'm seeing? All right. You know what? Let's ask Mike Salk about that next. We're also going to ask him to help us look at the Seahawks' chances in the postseason. He'll join us next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Joining us right now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Hello.
Mike, what'd you think about this game?
I liked it.
It's not perfect. I know that people are going to be freaking out today because the offense was a little stagnant, especially for the first three quarters, and that third quarter was certainly an ugly look for them. But I'm pretty darn jacked up about what this defense is doing right now. I mean, they have played essentially great football for half of a season. Not perfect, but they've played very good to great football for half a season. They have allowed more than 20 points only twice, and even in those two games, I believe it was 21 and 23. I guess this would be the third because of the backdoor touchdown. It didn't matter at the end, but they've really held their opponents down. They've come up with big stops when they needed to late in games. They've come up with turnovers when they've needed to. They've gotten to the quarterback. They've shut down a lot of the things that plagued them early in the year. They're difficult to run on. They're fairly healthy, and I know we'll wait and see what's going on with both Jaren Reed and Jamal Adams, but you take it all together, and you got a Seahawks team that looks like a Seahawks team. I think it's the best defense they've played since 2015 or so, and that gives me a lot of hope for them heading into the playoffs.
So what specifically does that give you hope for? So my meaning of my question here, Salk, is what team do you expect to see in the playoffs? Do you expect to see a team that sputters early in games and then comes back in the second half, fourth quarter, and keep it close? Or do you expect this offense to start coming alive along with the defense?
I expect it to look like most playoff games, which is sort of a back and forth trudgery affair, right? Where neither team is able to move the ball as well as they want. You've got to go to have some sort of a running game. I know Brock had the stat, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, that, you know, almost every single playoff game was won by the team with more rushing yards. That becomes more important as you get into that time of the year. And at the end, you're going to have Russell Wilson where the other team doesn't. Now, is that a challenge when you go up against Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers? Yeah, absolutely. It's going to come down to those single plays here and there and whether or not your quarterback can outduel their quarterback at the end. But I expect playoff games to look somewhat similar to what we've seen the last few weeks against the Rams and this past week as well.
One of the more consistent issues, so consistency, not normally a bad thing, but in this case, yes. Consistent issues with offense has been a failure to convert on third down. For me, has there been any other pattern you've seen that you think has contributed to, I guess, a bit of a falling off in the second half of the season?
No, the offensive line struggled a little bit more at times, you know, especially since Brandon Shell went out, right? They just haven't looked exactly as dominant as they were, I think, through the early and middle parts of this year. But you know, the only problem I really had again, you know, I thought they threw the ball too much yesterday, early especially. I mean, you know, not that they were having any specific success running the ball, but I felt like they didn't do a good enough job of getting Chris Carson involved. And it seemed like when they went back to their more balanced attack, and I don't mean a run first attack, but they had more than twice as many throws as they did passes throughout the first three quarters. Once they went back to a more balanced attack, it opened up everything. They had that great play and the little fake pitch, and all that worked because of the threat of Chris Carson. I know that there's a group that says play action works no matter what, and I understand a lot of that rationale. But when you watch this Seahawks team, not teams in general, but this Seahawks team, I think you see that they're significantly more effective offensively through play action when they've established the ability and the desire to run the football. And you've got to have a level of balance in order to get there.
So how big of a deal would it be to go into this Rams game without Jamal Adams? How much would that change your confidence, if at all?
Well, it maybe depends on who the quarterback is for the Rams. I mean, I think both of those things have to sort of balance each other out. You know, whether it's an injured Goff or what's the other kid's name who can run around a little bit, but, you know, nobody's ever heard of him. I mean, you know, if it's a quarterback that is making his second ever appearance in the NFL, my Jamal Adams net need is maybe not quite as high. But I think what we've seen is that when he got back to full health in the latter part of this season is really when the defense took off. It's his ability to rush the passer, his ability to make big hits, his ability to fire everybody up and get them playing with a physicality that has, I think, really affected other teams' offenses in the second half. So Jamal Adams is one of the best players on this team. It's made a little bit easier if he's not able to go by the fact that we've really seen some emergence the last few weeks. DJ Reed's gotten a lot of the credit. But how about their first round pick from last year, Jordan Brooks? I mean, every time he is on the field, he seems to be making plays. Kyle and I were talking about it this morning. He looks like a carbon copy of Bobby Wagner out there at times, except right now he's probably faster. So, I think they have guys that are playing well enough to make up some of the difference if Adams isn't able to go. But there's no doubt that this guy's a Pro Bowler and probably an All-Pro for a reason. He's really given them a different look.
Mike, there was a report that John Schneider was being sought after for the GM position with Detroit. You know John Schneider personally. You know Pete Carroll. How tempting do you think that offer will be for him?
I can't imagine anybody being tempted to leave the Seattle Seahawks to go to the Detroit Lions, other than Golden Tate. It just doesn't seem like it's a bad organization. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe John would have some interest in having full player control and really getting to be the GM in charge of everything, including selecting a coach, et cetera. I think he would. And obviously, sort of going back to that area of the country would be interesting to him. But John's a really smart guy, and if he is eventually going to leave the Seahawks, it's not going to be to take over an organization that has been, I don't even really know how to describe the Detroit Lions. They're one of the five or six worst organizations in all of sports, and that starts at the top and works its way all the way down. So I don't see that as being a realistic possibility for him at all. Why would he?
Now, Salk, you talked about the run game and needing to, or your desire to get Chris Carson involved early. I looked back and charted the plays that happened in those two scoring drives, and the one thing that remains just absolutely mind-blowing, it's been the story all year long, is how effective they have been on first and second down. They didn't face one third down until they got all the way down to the two goal line situations. They just were tearing it up on first and second down. And a couple of those were big explosive runs from Chris Carson. Do you believe that this team is built to be able to grind it out with Chris Carson, or do you think that this team has evolved into something else?
Well, it's a matter of whether or not they, I believe they could, but will they commit to it long enough to actually do it? You're right. I mean, when they get themselves going, it's when Carson's not having 1 or 2 yard runs. It's when he's running for 5, 6, 8 yards at a time and really dragging guys. And you can start to play everything off of that. That seems to be when they're at their most effective. So, you know, sometimes it takes a couple of series that don't go your way in order to work some of that stuff out. It's why the defense playing so well is so important. It's why Pete's comfort level in these low-scoring, ugly affairs is so important. I am comfortable with it. I think they're going to be comfortable with it because it's what Pete knows. And once you get to the playoffs, that's kind of stuff that tends to win games. So, you know, I sure would like to see them continue to play clean games. They haven't taken a lot of penalties. I thought the call on Collier for a late hit was garbage. What a terrible call that was. I didn't think he, you know, fell on him with any extra weight. I thought he made an attempt to lay off. I just thought that was a horrible call. They played pretty clean. They haven't been overly penalized. And that helps keep their drives on schedule. And if the offensive line, and maybe you get Shell back this week, that would certainly help. If their offensive line can continue to do what it's done and open up some of those holes early, I think their offense is going to be just fine because they've got Russell Wilson, and it really becomes a matter of this defense doing what it's been doing here in the second half of the season.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday here on Jake and Stacey at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right. Now, I said there were some real offensive concerns, ones to be completely fair to criticize. So we'll talk about those next, specifically what concerns are real and what are kind of nonsense.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost here with you. There are plenty of reasons to be concerned about the Seahawks, specifically the Seahawks offense heading into the postseason. Now, I know I like railed against anyone saying that this would be a bad team. And I don't think they're a bad team, but I think it is fair for people to have concerns because they, like many other teams, are a flawed team. So let's talk about what some of those flaws are, specifically whether those are real or just a bunch of malarkey. So We've identified four big things. Russell Wilson's deep ball accuracy, third down, play calling, I guess, inflexibility or lack of adjustment, and an offensive identity question, needing to pound the rock. So let's start with, I mean, just right out of the gate, the biggest one. It has to be Russell Wilson. It has to be Russell Wilson because, Jake, people's faith with how far this team can go, honestly, for many people, despite how good the defense has been in recent weeks, lies with Russell Wilson. And that's completely fair because that's usually how it's going to be when you've got a longtime franchise quarterback. So when Russell Wilson, who was supposed to be the best deep ball thrower in the league, misses or overthrows some guys or doesn't look as accurate, it makes a lot of people nervous. So is this offensive concern, Russell Wilson's deep ball accuracy, real or nonsense?
It's complete nonsense. Is Russell Wilson in his second year? Is he a second year unproven quarterback in this league? Like, I'm just curious as to where people are coming from with this. Is Russell Wilson is 9 seasons in this league, has a proven track record of his ability in this league and his ability to make good decisions, his ability to throw the ball accurately down the field. And to me, to see the complete lack of, I guess, trust or faith or benefit of the doubt in these situations, when you see some of these throwaways, people are not assuming they're throwaways. They're assuming that, oh, it's a bad throw by Russell Wilson. And I'm just curious as to where this transition has gone from with Russell Wilson, Stacey, as to where this guy is a league average quarterback versus one of the league's best quarterbacks. Because the last I checked, I still believe that he's one of the league's best quarterbacks. So to answer the reason why it's nonsense is because pretty much every single deep ball that was thrown that was not in reach was a throwaway. So that's the reason why I think when you look at these deep balls and question whether they were close, not close, they were throwaways. And ones that may have been, one in particular I can think of, Russ scrambled to his left, throws one, DK is in the area, in the vicinity, able to get a finger on it, but it's out of bounds. That's a throwaway that, hey, I can put it just close enough to the sideline that maybe something can happen here. But I'm going to, it's him or nobody, at worst case scenario. It is not a deep ball accuracy issue.
Now, saying it's not a deep ball accuracy issue, I agree with you. I think that it is fair to say that that specific critique, if you have to choose real or nonsense, you can say is nonsense. I think people's worries about Russell Wilson, though, Jake, are fair given the sum of the issues that this offense has had in the second half. So again, people saying Russell Wilson is broken, Russell Wilson has fallen off, I think are ignoring 9 years of consistent play. Russell Wilson, unfortunately, set the bar pretty high, playing like the MVP front runner by a lot through the first several weeks of the season, and then turning the ball over, some of which was a fault of him and some of which was not, turning the ball over for a stretch of games, and then not throwing for 5 touchdowns a game, which unfortunately is what people are looking to when they look at Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. And so I'm not doubting Russell Wilson. I'm saying that I think that has been behind the concerns about the deep ball.
And I'm not saying that there isn't a dip in production. I'm not saying that there's not a dip in production or that there hasn't been with this offense. And yes, Russell Wilson is going to be the one that you look towards in obvious situations, and you're going to, you know, expect a lot from your quarterback. But to me, again, when I go back and watch the film, there's a phrase that you have to remember that I think is very clear, is that it's never as good, it's never as bad. And this is a perfect example of a game in terms of the 49er game where it's not nearly as bad as what people are thinking. The execution needs to be better. There needs to be better execution on third downs, whether that's drops, whether that's protection, a misread, But overall, this is not Russell Wilson just all of a sudden, he can't see the field. He can't throw. He's not accurate. I think very clearly with the way that he played at the end of this game, he is still one of the league's elite quarterbacks in this league. Not many players or quarterbacks can do what he did at the end of the fourth quarter against a good defense like the 49ers.
All right. I do want to keep talking about this, but I got to move on because we've got three more here. The next one, you already know what I'm going to say. Third down. Very real to me. They did not take a step forward with this in their last game. They were 4 of 12, 33%. Last time I checked, they were hovering around 40% on the season. That is just not good enough. It is just not good enough. Now, you can still be a good team and struggle on third down, but you need to be better on third down if you want to be a great team, an elite team. They have the weapons to do it, but they haven't been consistently executing on third down.
And that is very, very real. This offense, for whatever reason, has not been good on third downs. And I shouldn't say for whatever reason. To me, there is a strong reason as to why this group hasn't been good on third downs. It's been a collective group. It's really has been. At times, it's been Russell not making the right decision. It has been at times offensive line protection not being where it needs to be, particularly in this 49ers game for some of these deeper concepts. It's been receivers not getting open or making the catch when it's there for them. I mean, Will Dissly, a ball is slightly behind. That ball actually ended up getting tipped, but it traveled far enough where, you know, he still should be able to react to that. He still should be able to catch it. But overall, this is a collective group effort that needs to be better in these third down situations. And the harsh reality is that, Stacey, you better hope that this group can be successful on first and second down. And luckily, they've been able to do that quite often this season, because their play on third down is just not where it needs to be in order for this offense to sustain drives consistently and to get more opportunities in the red zone. Those two field goal attempts at the beginning of the first half, Stacey, are truly unfortunate, because those are two great drives that were ended in third down stops there in the red zone.
All right, Jake, 2 minutes here. I'm going to let you kind of take charge with both of these last two. Let's start with play calling. I know it's not the best use, but play calling inflexibility is the word I chose with this one. Basically, a lack of adjustment on play calling. Real or nonsense?
Well, I would say that there is a... How I would describe it? I would say it's in the middle. It's not this offensive play calling. It hasn't been bad or horribly bad. Or you look at this 49ers game, it wasn't horribly bad or anything like that. I think, you know, the need for adjustment, I would have tried to turn the tempo up a little bit earlier in this game versus a 49ers defense. You know, Robert Saleh was dialing stuff up, and to be able to get them out of some of those things, I think being able to turn the tempo up puts pressure on them to get more to their base stuff, their less exotic stuff, which they were having success with. But I think that, you know, what they were able to do in that fourth quarter, I will come back to the fourth quarter versus the 49ers. I will come back to the second half versus the Rams, Stacey. Those two things to me are extremely important.
All right. How about needing to pound the rock? Now, well, you added, you know, this one, so I got to hear about it.
Yeah, well, we heard this from Mike Salk in the last segment, and Salk was saying, well, we need to run the ball more. We need to be more patient with the run game. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I would say that's more nonsense than anything. If we're going to put it into a particular category, I just think what needs to happen is there needs to be a good marriage between the run and the pass game. You didn't see that. And I believe that when you talk about this group for Chris Carson, for the Seahawks, it's about being effective with your runs. It's about being effective in the pass game and making sure that you are staying on schedule on first and second down. You don't need to lose drives or forfeit drives just because you simply want to try and establish the run and you know, play a little rope-a-dope and get guys tired so that you can run the ball late in the game. That's not what this offense is at this stage of the season.
All right, breaking down every single play, figuring out exactly how the Seahawks got to their win over the 49ers. That's next in Plays of the Game.